Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is May the 19th, and we are in Sefer Bamidbar, page 778 in Parshas Baaloscha. Today is Pesach Sheni, and we are about to start Pesach Sheni, Pasuk Vav, verse 6. The Jews have made the Pesach the second year they were in the Midbar, and now the Torah tells us, Vayhi Anashim, there were men, Asher Hayu Tumeim LeNefesh Adam. They were Tumei to the soul of man, which means they had come in contact with a dead body. V'lo Yachlu La'asos HaPesach Bayom Hahu. They were unable to do the Pesach, the Korban Pesach, on that day, meaning on the 14th of Nisan. Vayikrivu Lifnei Moshe V'Lifnei Aaron Bayom Hahu. So they came before Moshe and before Aaron on that day. So they came to ask what to do. Vayomru ha'anashim ha'hema elav. And those men said to Moshe, Anachnu tmeim lenefesh adam. We are tamei to the soul of man. Lama nigara. Why should we be excluded? Levilti hakrives karban Hashem b'moado. To not bring the karban of Hashem in its time, besoch b'nei Yisrael, among the Jewish people, within the Jewish people. Vayomer alehem Moshe. Moshe said to them, Imdu ve'eshma, stand and hear, mayitzaveh Hashem lachem, what Hashem will command you. And before we read what actually Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, which we know is going to be a Pesach Sheni, but let's understand what happened over here. Some people were tamei, so they couldn't do the Karban Pesach. If a person is tamei, they cannot bring any Karban, certainly can't bring the Karban Pesach. So therefore they came before Moshe and before Aaron. The Gemara explains, of course, it doesn't mean they came to Moshe, and then when Moshe didn't know the answer, they went to Aaron. That doesn't make any sense. If Moshe didn't know it, no one would know it. But it means they came before Moshe and Aaron together. Moshe and Aaron were together, and they approached them. But they spoke particularly to Moshe, and they said, we're Tamei, why should we be excluded from bringing the Karban of Hashem in its proper time? So the request itself, or the statement itself, is a little surprising. The people themselves, the Gemara asks, who are these people? Who were these people who were Tamei? So there are several opinions in the Gemara. One opinion in the Gemara is just people who had been in contact with a dead body. It takes 7 days to become Tahar from having come in contact with a dead body. So anybody who had attended a funeral within a week of Pesach could not have brought the Karban. So in a people that's several million people large, a nation that's 7 million people large, you're always going to have some people who are Tamei, and they couldn't bring the Karban Pesach. However, the Gemara has some opinions that they were actually very specific people who we are familiar with. One, we're not familiar with the people themselves, but we're familiar with the task at hand, which was that they were the ones tasked with transporting the coffin of Yosef through the Midbar, which means they were almost perpetually Tamei. We know that Yosef's bones were his remains were removed from Egypt by Moshe Rabbeinu when we left Egypt. And there were members of Klal Yisrael who were tasked with the job of transporting that coffin. Now, if the Jews had been encamped for a very long period of time, it could be they didn't need to come in contact with the body, with the coffin. But they were responsible to oversee Yosef's body. So they might have been Tamei. Another opinion in the Gemara is that we know that that Nadav and Avihu were killed on the first day of Nisan. We know that in Parshas Shmini, they were killed on the first day of Nisan when they brought the Esh Zara, the foreign offering to Hashem. Aaron's sons died. And then Moshe tells Mishael ve'el Tzafan Mishael and Elzaphan are Moshe's cousins, to go and remove the bodies from the Mishkan and to deal with them. So that means they became Tameh. Now, their becoming Tameh would have been 2 weeks before Pesach, which would have been ample time to become Tahar, but the Gemara seems to indicate that it took them some time to deal with the bodies of Nadav and Avihu, and that they might have still been Tameh from that encounter. Whatever it is, the people who came before Moshe Rabbeinu are held in high esteem in the Gemara. They're not criticized for coming before Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, they're given credit for the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni, which would have been given anyway. Hashem would have told Moshe Rabbeinu about Pesach Sheni, but the Gemara says, "Megalgulim zchus al yidei zakai," that Hashem brings about a merit through people who deserve merit. And just as we find later in the Chumash, a story which we will come to in a little while, the story of the Benos Tzalavchad, that the daughters of Tzalavchad, through whom the order of inheritance was taught to the Bnei Yisrael, it had not been taught yet. And when Benos Tzalavchad, the daughters of Tzalavchad, came before Moshe Rabbeinu, saying that since they have no brothers, they should get their father's inheritance, and through them Hashem taught the mitzvah of the order of inheritance. So the Gemara says, of course Hashem was going to tell Moshe Rabbeinu anyway, but because these righteous women had a reason to come before Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem brought it about through them. Here as well, these righteous men who were Tameh deserved to have the mitzvah Pesach Sheni taught through them. So these are considered righteous people who came before Moshe Rabbeinu about the Pesach Sheni. The question is, I really mentioned this yesterday in Shul, which is that why should they presume that they wouldn't be left out? Almost every mitzvah, will leave out some people. There are always people who will be left out. If you have a country, nation of several million people, you're always going to have exceptions who can't perform any kind of mitzvah. God forbid a person is unable to move their hands. They won't be able to pick up a lulav and esrog. That's the way it goes. The Gemara says if a person can't walk, then they're exempt from the mitzvah of ola regel, of going to the Beis HaMikdash 3 times a year. I mean, there's always reasons why a person is exempt. A woman gives birth within 2 days of Yom Kippur. Well, she's exempt from fasting on Yom Kippur. Now, is that a bad thing? Of course not. That's the status that she's in at that time of her life. But she's not going to fast. She's not going to get the mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur. She is unable to fast that day. So she's not allowed to fast that day, in fact. So what? Why do they assume that they should not be excluded? They happen to be Tameh. It's a fact of life. People become Tameh. That's the way it works. You have a nation of 3 million people, you're going to have people who are Tameh on any given day of the calendar. So why would they think that they should not be excluded and they should come before Moshe Rabbeinu and say, why should we be excluded? What leg do they feel they have to stand on?
They were doing a mitzvah.
It's true. They were doing a mitzvah. That's
the
right.
The punishment is so bad to miss it.
What's that?
It's so bad to miss the carbon mitzvah.
It's true. It is bad.
Because they don't have it for every other musaf or every other, carbon.
Yeah, this is an individual carbon. This is not a carbon sebor. This is not...
The Omer
is a carbon sebor. That's for the whole...
There's no other individuals that are...
Well, there are other individual carbonos, but this is certainly the most important of all the individual carbonos. This is by choice. Do you want to say the same thing?
So it was the first time. It wasn't a normal thing that's going to be recurring. So they didn't want to miss out.
Oh, I see. I mean, this was really the only time it was going to happen in the Midbar, and they didn't want to miss out on that.
Do they know that?
They may not have known that. They may not have known that at the time.
Maybe it shall be a beloved Torah to follow Hashem's command.
Yeah, that certainly it does show that. There's no question.
But it's in that point of time, so how would they know that there could be something else, maybe? There's nothing you can do otherwise.
Okay, good. You can't. There's no other way to do it.
And they didn't know that maybe you could.
And they're very severe punishment if you don't.
Yeah, so if one does not bring the Karban Pesach on purpose when they could have, the punishment is kares, which is a very severe punishment. Still, they couldn't. It's not that they were choosing not to bring the Karban Pesach. They weren't able to bring the Karban Pesach. They were in a state where they couldn't do it. But we learned last week that the Karban Pesach has special dispensations that you don't find with any other Karban. Or virtually any other carbon. And that is that it says, b'moado, in its time, which teaches us two very important things. Number one, that even if the 14th of Nisan is on Shabbos, the Karban Pesach is Doche Shabbos, we bring it even though it's Shabbos, we violate Shabbos to bring the Karban Pesach. And in addition to that, if most of the congregation is Tamei with Tumas Meis, with having come in contact with the dead body, then we bring the Karban Pesach even though we are Tamei. So we have dispensations for the Karban Pesach. Most importantly, we have a dispensation for Tuma when that Tuma is for Mace, which means if 51% of the Jews are Tamei Mace, have come in contact with the dead body, which could happen if right before Pesach, let's say a great leader passes away and everybody attends the funeral. So if everybody attends the funeral, depending on where everybody is, if they go to the graveyard, they can all become Tamei, or most of them could become Tamei. So the halacha then is, the Karban Pesach is brought even though, despite the fact that people are Tamei Meis. So in this case, that was not so. In this case, it was not a majority of the Jewish people who were Tamei Meis. It was individuals who were Tamei Meis. But they were saying, since we find that the rule of Tumah is set aside when it is a majority of the Jewish people who are Tamei, we are now not a majority, we're a minority, but then why should we be left out? After all, if more people were involved in the very same mitzvah that we're involved in, then we would all be able to do the Karban Pesach. It's only because we stepped forward and did, we took responsibility. We took responsibility to be on the Chevra Kadisha. We're the ones who are burying the dead. Well, if we wouldn't have stepped forward, other people would have had to step forward. And perhaps a majority of Jewish people would have had to step forward, and then it would have been permitted for all of us to bring the Karban Pesach. So because we took responsibility for the majority and we are the minority that became Tamei, we should be left out? That's the strength of their argument, which is why we don't find that people who had other types of Tumah came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Because anybody with any type of Tumah cannot bring the Karban Pesach. It's not just Tamei Meis. It's all tumas. Now, most tumas, or many tumas, are only a one-day tuma, so they can become pure before the offering of the Karban Pesach. But there are many tumas that are not a one-day tuma, there are a seven-day tuma. And we don't find other people coming before Moshe Rabbeinu and saying, why should we be left out? The answer is, because you can't bring it. That's the way it goes. As we said, there's always circumstances that preclude different people from doing different things. Not everybody gets the same things all the time. That's the way it goes. The only time that I know of in history where every single Jew was Tahar, and that Moshe Rabbeinu saw to it, and Hashem saw to it, that everybody would be Tahar, was at Matan Torah. At Matan Torah, their steps were taken to ensure that everybody be Tahar. And that was anyway an unusual circumstance. But typically, you take 3 million people, you're always going to have a percentage. I don't know how big the percentage is, 5%, 10%. 20%, people are going to be Tamei, that's the way it goes. The only ones who came to Moshe Rabbeinu were the ones who were Tamei Meis, because they were saying that there is a dispensation for Tumas Meis, and that is if a majority are Tamei, and we took responsibility, so how come we're being left out? That was their complaint. And they were correct, as we're about to see, and we know that Hashem responded with the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. The Gemara also points out over here, in the last line of the paragraph in Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, stand and listen what Hashem will command to you. So as Rashi quotes Chazal over here, Ashrei Yelod Isha Shekach Muvtach. Fortunate is man born from a woman. fortunate is the human being that is so guaranteed. She calls man Shayel Rotze said, and anytime he wanted, he was able to speak with Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu had a direct line, he had a hotline. He was able to pick up the phone and call Hashem whenever he chose, which is not true of other Nevi'im. Other Nevi'im could attempt to access Hashem, they could purify themselves, they could think about the things that would bring to connection with Hashem, and they could hope that Hashem would communicate with them, but there was no guarantee. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to actually get on the phone, speak to Hashem. And that's a very special thing that we only find with Moshe Rabbeinu, that he had the ability to do that. Here we have one of the examples that it happens a few times in Chumash, that Moshe Rabbeinu says, hold on a second, I'll check it out. And then he speaks to Hashem, and here is one of them. Yeah.
Why should we, amongst everybody else, be singled out and not be allowed to do this mitzvah? But it seems like that they just didn't want to miss out on their own being able to do that mitzvah. Not based on what everybody else was doing, they just didn't want to miss out themselves on doing that.
It's
why
true.
Why is it based on what everybody else is doing?
It's true, but there were others who were also left out. And they were not given a dispensation. They did not come before Moshe Rabbeinu. There were many others who were left out. Other people were tummy with different types of tumah. And we don't find that anybody came before Moshe. It's only those who were tummy mace who came before Moshe. That's what we're explaining, that it has to do with the fact that there is a dispensation for that type of tumah. When it's everybody else. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam
Shehakol Nivra.
And so, as we turn the page, we have the answer. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Daber al bnei Yisrael Lemar." Speak to the Jewish people, saying, "Ish ish ki yeh tamei lo nefesh." Any man who will be tamei, but only in the tumma of a soul, meaning coming in contact with a dead body. Oh. There's another dispensation. If you're too far away, to make it in time for the Karban Pesach, also for future generations, not just for this generation, but all generations, still, they can still make a Karban Pesach for Hashem, even though they're either tamei or too far away and unable to do the Karban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. There is a second chance, but not until the second month. B'chodesh Hasheni, in the second month, B'arba'a Asar Yom, on the 14th day of the month, which is today, Bein Harbayim, in the afternoon, which is now, Ya'asu Aso, they should do it, Al Matzos Umirorim Yocheluhu. And just as with the first Karban Pesach, the Pesach Sheni, they should eat it with matzah and with maror. Lo yashiru mimenu ad boker, just as with the first Karban Pesach, they may not leave any of it over till morning. Ve'etzem lo yishburuvo, and just as with the first Karban Pesach, they may not break any bones. Kechol chukasa Pesach yasu. So like all the laws of the Pesach, they should do it. So there is a second Pesach, the Pesach Sheni, in the second month. However, now we have a warning. Don't get complacent and rely on that Pesach Sheni. V'aish asher hu tahar, the man who is pure, uv'derech lo hayah, and he was not on the road, v'chadal la'asos ha-Pesach, and he did not do the Pesach, he refrained, good, from doing, thank you, from doing the Pesach, then v'nichrasa nefesh ahi me'amea, that soul will be cut off from his nation, meaning it's kares, and there is no makeup date. If the person was negligent in bringing the Karban Pesach, there is no makeup date. Ki karban Hashem lo hikriv b'moado, because the Karban of Hashem, he did not bring in its proper time. Chet o yisa ha'ishahu, that man will carry his sin. And finally, one more statement about the Karban Pesach, which does not seem to be directly related, although we'll talk about it in a moment. V'chiyaguri tchem ger, when a convert shall live with you, v'asa pesach la Hashem, he shall also make a Karban Pesach for Hashem. Kichukasa pesach uchemishpato ken yaseh, according to the statutes of the Pesach and according to its laws, so should he do. Chukachas yelachem, one law for all of you. Both for the stranger, meaning the convert, and for the native of the land, meaning the born Jew, and the convert will have the same rules when it comes to the Karban Pesach. This is Daniel Pransky. In this class on Pesach Sheni, given on May 19th, 2019, I made several errors regarding the Pesach Sheni, and those mistakes are explained and corrected in the next class, which was given on May 26th, 2019. The main mistake that I made is regarding who is eligible for the Pesach Sheni. In this class, I repeated over and over again that only those mentioned in the Psukim, which are those who became tamei to a dead body, and those who are too far away from the Beis HaMikdash, are the ones eligible for the Pesach Sheni, whereas everybody else is ineligible. This is not true. That is a mistake, and it is not correct. The truth is, as I mentioned in the next class, everyone is eligible for the Pesach Sheni, no matter the reason why they did not perform the Pesach Rishon. The difference between what's mentioned here in the Chumash and other types of reasons has to do with the punishment if the person missed both the Pesach Rishon and the Pesach Sheni. This will be explained in the next class. Please note again that this was a mistake. It is repeated over and over again. I repeated it over and over again in this class. It is not true. It is not correct. It is not Torah. And it is a mistake. There are other relatively minor errors that I made, which are again mentioned in the next class that was given the next week on May the 26th. So the Karban Pesach is for those who were Tamei, but only Tumas Meis, and those who were too far away. There is a little bit of a debate what it means to be too far away. The Rambam says it means that if a person was when the sun rose on the morning of the 14th of Nisan, a person was too far away to make it to the Beis HaMikdash before sunset, then they are considered too far away and they can bring the Karban Pesach. If, though, they were closer, then they are expected to get to the Beis HaMikdash to bring the Karban Pesach. One could have argued and said, well, don't you have a responsibility to get close enough that in the morning of the 14th of Nisan you're close enough to make it to the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is, yeah, you might have a responsibility, but even if you didn't, you can still bring the Pesach Sheni as long as you could not have humanly done it once sunrise happens on the 14th of Nisan. So that means if on the 13th of Nisan a person was, let's say, a 15-hour journey away from the Beis HaMikdash on the 13th of Nisan, they could have traveled 5 hours, 6 hours on the 13th of Nisan, so that on the 14th of Nisan they would then be close enough to make it. They didn't do that. On the 13th of Nisan they stayed put. The next morning, now they're too far away, 15 hours is too much to travel, they'll never make it in time. They can bring the Pesach Sheni. Even though one could have argued they were somewhat negligent in not having traveled on the 13th, they still could bring the Pesach Sheni. But if on the 14th, they're only, let's say, 8 hours away, and they could have made it, and they were negligent and didn't travel, they could not bring the Karban Pesach. So the Rambam understands it has to do with where a person is in the morning as the sun rises on the 14th of Nisan. It's based on a Gemara, a debate on exactly what's called too far away. Tamei again means Tamei Meis, not any other type of Tumah. If the person could not have become Tar in time, then they can bring the Pesach Sheni. Now, it should be noted that, as I mentioned, there are other reasons why a person could not bring the Pesach Rishon, and they would not be allowed to bring the Pesach Sheni, they wouldn't be punished. There's no punishment because they couldn't have done it. A person had a different type of Tumah and they couldn't bring the Pesach Rishon, then they just can't do it. They're considered an Ones. They're exempt. They couldn't do it. It's like a woman giving birth right before Yom Kippur and can't fast. So she's exempt. They're exempt. And there's no Pesach Sheni. An example of this would be, let's say a person was close enough to make it in time for the Pesach Rishon. Let's say they were a few hours out of Yerushalayim when the sun rose on the first day of on the 14th of Nisan. And as the Rambam says, they're traveling and there's traffic. And they get stuck in traffic. He says there's too many animals. And they get stuck behind all those sheep. And they can't make it. They get locked out. I'm trying. I can't make it. There's gridlock, and they don't make it in time. So in that case, they're exempt. They couldn't do it, but they do not bring the Pesach Sheni because they were close enough on the morning of Pesach Rishon to have made it. They could have made it, and therefore they cannot bring the Pesach Sheni. But they are not punished. They tried their best. They couldn't do it.
So they don't get
karis. No, karis would only be a deliberate. Not bringing of the carbon.
Because, like, you know, sometimes you know how you're getting ready for Shabbos and everything is bright, and then the Yetzer Hara comes in.
Yeah.
So that
never happens.
Does that happen? Like they're bringing their animals, and the animal dies on the way.
Yeah, can happen. That's right.
You know, or gets attacked.
Right.
By other animals.
Or they actually show up, and it turns out the animal has a blemish
right. That
they didn't know.
So they wouldn't
and,
get.
And they can't get another animal in time.
Right.
Right. They're not punished. No, they're not punished. Okay. But they also cannot bring the Pesach Sheni. The Pesach Sheni is very, it's not a makeup date for everybody. It's very specific. It's for Tumas Mace and for being too far away the morning of the 14th. That's it.
There were no Hametz restrictions.
That's what we're going to talk about now. Okay, so what did this look like, this Pesach Sheni? Today, as we write right now, would be the time offering the Pesach Sheni. So those of us who were too far away or who were Tumas Mace for the first Pesach, we would be offering it right now. It means we'd be in Yerushalayim, and we'd be offering it right now. And okay, so then what does it look like? So we need matzah, and we need maror. Just like you need matzah and maror the first time, you need matzah and maror this time as well. Okay, fine. So you get yourself some matzah, shmura matzah. You get yourself some maror. Great. And you eat it together with the Pesach. You have to eat it al hasova. You have to be satiated before you eat it, just like we have at the Seder. We eat the afikoman today, which is matzah, but it's really supposed to be a piece of roasted meat. That's what you do with the Pesach Sheni as well, which is that you first have to fill up on other things, which means you might bring another carbon to fill up on that carbon first, and then eat the Pesach Sheni along with matzah and maror. We of course have the debate whether you eat the matzah and maror separately with the meat, or whether you put it all together like Hillel. And you put it all together, right? We know that. That debate would apply to Pesach Sheni as well. But there's no Seder. It's not a Seder. You don't have Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim telling the story. There's no Yom Tov. There's no getting rid of Chametz. You can eat Chametz. You can even have bread at the same meal. It says Matzah and Chametz Imo Babayis. There's no, it's not Pesach. That's the thing. It's not a makeup for Pesach. It's a makeup for the carbon Pesach. It's not a makeup for Pesach. It's not a new Pesach. It's just the carbon. And not only that, but it's unclear. The following point is unclear. You know, normally when you offer a carbon, any carbon, so you offer the carbon, let's say a carbon that the person who's offering it actually eats some of it, a shlamim, a peace offering, something that a todah, a thanksgiving, where you're going to eat some of it. So the day that you bring the carbon, first of all, a carbon can be brought in the morning normally. You don't have to wait till the afternoon. Normally it can be brought any time of the day. So you can bring it in the morning. Then you're allowed to eat the carbon, the balance of that day till the sun goes down, and the following night you're allowed to eat the carbon. Some carbonos you could even eat into the next day. But let's take a carbon which you can only eat for one day, not into the next day. So you have the balance of the day after you offer the carbon, plus the night. Now you only have until the middle of the night, because Chazal didn't want you to assume you have more and more and more time, and you keep pushing it off and procrastinating, and then the sun rises and you have to burn the meat. So they backed you up and they said you only have until Chatzos, till the middle of the night. Okay, fine. So that's normally how it works. The Karban Pesach, let's talk about Pesach Rishon for a moment, has a few differences. First of all, you can only offer the Karban in the afternoon, not in the morning. But more importantly, you can't begin eating it until nightfall. You can't eat it during the day. You have much less time to eat the Karban Pesach than any other Karban. You can only begin eating it after nightfall, and then you only have until the middle of the night to eat it. So you're very limited in the amount of time you have to eat the Karban Pesach. Very different than other Karbanos. Now, Pesach Sheni, just like Pesach Rishon, you can't offer it in the morning. You can only offer it in the afternoon, which is like the Pesach Rishon, different than other Karbanos. It doesn't say, though, that you're not allowed to eat it before nightfall. It doesn't say that. Ben Arbaim is when you offer it. That's the afternoon. But it doesn't say when you eat it. The Pesach Rishon, you can't eat until nightfall. That's because it goes along with the Seder. It goes along with Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It goes along with Yom Tov. But there's no Yom Tov here. There's no Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's no four cups of wine. You don't have any of that with the Pesach Sheni. So, it's very possible, it's unclear to me, it's very possible that one is allowed to eat it in the afternoon. Doesn't have to wait until nightfall. Because it's not, as I said, it's not a makeup for Pesach. It's a makeup for the Karban Pesach. Now, you can certainly eat it after nightfall, because it's no different than any other carbon. You can eat it at night, too. But it's very possible you're allowed to eat it already in the afternoon itself. Now, I say this because people have a custom to eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. There is no halacha like that. You should just be aware, there is no halacha anywhere. It is not a requirement to eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. But people like to do it. It harkens back to the day of the Pesach Sheni. You notice that nobody seems to have the custom to eat maror on Pesach Sheni. But I'm not sure why that is. But there is a custom, some people have to eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. So when, if you have that custom, when do you eat it? So, if Pesach Sheni would be like Pesach Rishon, you really shouldn't eat it until after nightfall tonight.
But then it's not the 14th anymore.
But it's not the 14th, it's the 15th.
Right, yeah. But if we eat it in the afternoon here, it's nightfall in Jerusalem, where we would have been giving the carbon Pesach,
okay,
so we're potter.
That's interesting. No, but because Pesach Sheni really could be eaten in the afternoon, so those who have the custom to eat matzah would have eaten it for dinner tonight, even though it's still daytime, because the Pesach Sheni would be brought on the 14th, and ostensibly would even eaten in the afternoon of the 14th as well. So again, but again, keep in mind it is not a halacha; it is simply a custom, and therefore there really is no specific rules around how you eat it. But that's that a lot of people have that custom to eat matzah.
Rabbi Pransky, why do you have to be satiated before you eat the Pesach Sheni?
The rule with Pesach Rishon is that it has to be eaten. The Torah says it has to be eaten al hasova. Once one is already satiated. That's why we eat it at the end. That's why it's the afikomen. It's after the meal is over. It's dessert.
Oh, so it
would be the same rule.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Then why also isn't the same rule about doing it after dark?
Because that is a Seder related rule. That's a Seder / Yom Tov related rule.
And the also was not Seder related?
There's no Seder here.
Right, but the idea that you have to be
Allah
Sova is
Seder
related.
This, no, Sova would apply no matter what. No matter when we would eat it, it says it has to be Allah Sova.
No, because it's not after Shulchan.
That's why they put it after Shulchan, but it's not a Seder related rule.
I'm just trying to visualize. Let's say the father was part of Chevra Kedisha, okay? So he can't give the Pesach offering, but he still tells his children and runs through the Seder on Seder night. He just can't eat.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Now the question is, can someone be sitting at the table at the meal if he cannot eat from the Karban Pesach? That is a question, because there was a concern, maybe he'll eat from it, right? And not allowed to. So that is unclear to me whether he was allowed to be there once they started eating. But the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim really is independent. It is a separate mitzvah. There's a mitzvah that you have to tell over the story of of Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's also a mitzvah of eating the matzah, eating the maror, eating the Pesach. And remember that even the person who couldn't eat from the Pesach on the first time had a mitzvah to eat matzah. Just like we do. We don't have a carbon Pesach, but we still have a mitzvah to eat matzah. Now, maror, if you don't have the carbon Pesach, is only derabbanan. Today, we don't have a carbon Pesach. So today, our mitzvah to eat maror, the night of Pesach, is only derabbanan. It's only rabbinic, because we don't have a carbon Pesach. It's only, the mitzvah of maror is only going to be from the Torah when it's with the carbon Pesach. But matzah stands alone. It is a mitzvah to eat matzah on the night of Pesach, whether you have a carbon Pesach or whether you don't. So that family that you just mentioned, where the father is part of the Chevra Kadisha and the rest of them are not, so they're having a Seder, that there is a mitzvah, they all have the mitzvah of telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they all have a rabbinic mitzvah of drinking four cups of wine, they all have a mitzvah to eat matzah. Maror would be a Torah mitzvah for everybody who's eating the carbon Pesach, but for that father, it would only be rabbinic, if at all. I don't know whether it will be even rabbinic at the time that we have the Beis HaMikdash. So Mara would be different. And then, of course, the carbon Pesach itself, the father would not be able to eat from, everybody else would.
But if the Afikoman is supposed to be like the carbon Pesach, then why do we hide it? Because they didn't hide the carbon Pesach.
Yeah. The hiding is just a show.
The ones who are coming doesn't
say to hide it. It says is that it's become the custom to grab the Afikoman, to be chotef it from one, to grab it from one another, to show the chavivus ha-mitzvah, so much how much we, with the endearment we have from mitzvah. So everybody wants the mitzvah. That's become the custom. So that segues into hiding it and then for them, you know, bartering for it and all that. So that's keeps everybody awake. So on the 14th of Nisan, 14th of Iyar, you have this Pesach Sheni, which makes up for some people, makes up for the fact that they couldn't bring the Karban Pesach the first time around. But then the Torah ends this discussion with a mention of the convert, that the rule for the convert and the rule for the native, the born Jewish person, is the same when it comes to Karban Pesach. Same rules for both of them. So, first of all, since the Torah says that when there'll be a convert, he shall do a Karban Pesach, the Gemara says that there even is the Gemara says this is not the case, but the Gemara is unsure. The Gemara says perhaps the Torah means that part of the process of converting is that a person converts, and conversion requires, of course, going to the mikvah. A man has to be circumcised. Men and women both have to go to the mikvah. Both men and women have to accept the mitzvahs upon themselves. Perhaps, no matter when a person converts, the first thing they do when they come out of the mikvah is offer a Karban Pesach. Maybe that's what they have to do. Perhaps that's part of the process of becoming a convert. And the Gemara says, no, that's not the case. The Torah does not mean that. The Gemara says that it sounds from this pasuk that might be what it means, but it's not what it means. Rather, it means that when Pesach comes around the next year, that the convert offers the Karban Pesach along with everybody else. Why would you think differently? I mean, a convert is a convert, so they do all the mitzvos. So why would we have thought that a convert should not offer a Karban Pesach?
Do we have the same exact point this week in Parsha? There are also that said about the ger, and then that's the same question. Like, why would you think it's so? Because talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, because he didn't come to Mitzrayim.
Okay, because good, because he did that right. So there is a reference to it also in Emor. So
there is because he didn't come out of Mitzrayim. So here you could say the same.
Exactly. Right. So because he did not come out of Egypt, he wasn't taken out of Egypt. So perhaps there would be no Karban Pesach for a convert. So the Torah says, no, that's not the case, that a convert is the same as everybody else and offers a Karban Pesach, which means that even though the ger did not come out of Mitzrayim, but he still has the same gratitude to Hashem for taking the Jews out of Egypt, because obviously if Hashem would not have taken the Jews out of Egypt, there would be nothing to convert to. So there is that same gratitude, and he offers the same Karban Pesach as everybody else, and he is also subject to Pesach Sheni, because you might have thought, well, okay, I understand that the Ger who didn't go out of Egypt, okay, but he's part of the Jewish people, so he has the first Pesach. But he should have a makeup date and a Pesach Sheni as well. Torah says yes, Pesach Sheni as well. It's fully the same as a regular Jew when it comes to Karban Pesach, and he would offer the Karban Pesach Sheni in the event that he was unable to bring the Pesach Rishon for the reasons that are mentioned here. Either he was Tamei or that he was too far away the day of the Karban Pesach.
Did anyone mention that it could be spiritually too far away, like he didn't convert until after Pesach? Yeah, well, and so this is his first opportunity to keep it or whatever, like spiritually far away?
Yeah, no. So
or it's just distance?
Yeah, no, just distance. Then he would not bring the Karban Pesach. The Gemara speaks about what if a person is under Bar Bas Mitzvah for Pesach Rishon. And now for Pesach Sheni, their Bar Bar says they would not bring Karban Pesach. It has to only be for a person who was Tamei or too far away, and they had they been Tahar or close, they would have offered the Karban Rishon, the Karban Pesach Rishon. Then they offer the Pesach Sheni. Pasuk Tes Vav, verse 15, the next paragraph. Uviyom Hakimas HaMishkan, and on the day that the Mishkan was established, was put up, Kisa Ha'ananas HaMishkan, the cloud covered the Mishkan, Le'ohel Ha'edus, for the tent of the testimony, which means that's where the Aron is, that's where the Ark is with the Luchos. Uva Erev, and in the evening, Yial Mishkan Kemarei Esh, it would be on the Mishkan like an appearance of fire, Ad Boker till the morning. So the cloud, that same cloud that we know that when the Egyptians were chasing us, was during the day was a cloud, and at night it turned into a pillar of fire. So over the Mishkan was a special cloud, a cloud of glory, which would then become a fire at night, just as it did at that time. Now, that the Torah begins by telling us this happened on the day the Mishkan was established. But now the Torah is going to tell us some things that took place throughout the 40 years that we were in the Midbar. Ken yes samid, this would be constant. Ha'anan yechatsenu, the cloud would cover the Mishkan. Umarei esh loila, and an appearance of fire at night. It must have been an awesome thing to see. This cloud was a special cloud, and at night it would be this burning fire. You'd be in the middle of the Midbar. There were no street lamps, and you'd have this bright pillar of fire that was over the Mishkan every night. The great way to know that Hashem is with you
and keeping you warm.
Okay, Kim, I don't know if they needed that, perhaps, but I don't know if it provided warmth, because I think the clouds surrounding them provided the
it's actually
from the elements. Yeah. Pasuk 17, Ulefi he'alos he'anan me'ala o'el, and according to the cloud rising up from above the tent, and afterwards the Jews would travel. Meaning, when the cloud would rise, that would indicate that it was time to travel. And in the place where the cloud would rest, that's where the Jews would encamp. That's how they would know. They would follow the cloud. The cloud went up, they knew it was time to travel. The cloud settled, they knew it was time to camp. By the mouth of Hashem, the Jews would travel, and by the mouth of Hashem they would encamp. Kol yemei asher yishkon ha'anan al mishkan yachanu. All the days that the cloud would dwell over the Mishkan, they would encamp. They wouldn't move. Uveharich ha'anan al mishkan yamim rabim. And when the cloud was over the Mishkan for many days, v'shamru v'nei yisal es mishmeres Hashem, the Jews would guard the guarding of Hashem. V'lo yiso, they would not travel. V'yesh, and there were times, that the cloud would be over the Mishkan for only a few days. According to the word of Hashem, they would camp. And according to the word of Hashem, they would travel. So even if it was only a few days, then they would travel again. V'yesh, there were times, where the cloud was only there from evening until morning. And then the cloud went up in the morning. And they would travel. They had just camped the night before. Now it went up. They would travel again. Sometimes it was there just a day and a night. And then it went up. The cloud went up and they traveled. Or 2 days. Or a month. Or a year. When the cloud would be on the Mishkan for a long time to dwell upon it, Yachanu v'nei Yisrael, the Jews would encamp. V'lo Yisoh, they would not travel. Uvehei alo so Yisoh, and when it went up, they would travel. Al pi Hashem Yachanu, by the word of Hashem, they would encamp. V'al pi Hashem Yisoh, by the word of Hashem, they would travel. Es mishmeres Hashem Shamaru, the guarding of Hashem, they guarded. I'm looking at what it says over here. They safeguarded the word of Hashem. Al pi Hashem biad Moshe, by the word of Hashem in the hands of Moshe. Now, where Moshe comes into this, we will see later. We're not ready to discuss. Moshe is going to have a particular role in the traveling, which has not been mentioned. All that's been mentioned over here is the cloud. But it's been mentioned an awful lot. Rising, settling, by the word of Hashem, by the word of Hashem, by the word of Hashem, by the word of Hashem.
How did they know that was Hashem's doing that?
Well, I mean, the cloud. It was a special cloud. I mean, okay. So there seems to be a lot of redundancy here. We are not going to answer every single nuance here. I'm sure there is a way to answer every nuance. I don't have that at my fingertips. We're not going to attempt that. However, we are going to address the general thrust of this paragraph, which seems to say the same thing over and over and over again. That basically the point is that the cloud told them when to camp and when to travel and where to camp and where to travel, and the Jews did whatever the cloud indicated, which they knew was from Hashem. Right. Okay, great. That's a lot shorter than the paragraph we just read. So what is the main point of this paragraph? So the thing is like this. Let's remember that the Jews camping and traveling had two different forms. There was the traveling and the encamping that took place prior to the sin of the spies. And then there was the traveling and the encamping that took place post the sin of the spies. The big difference is that before the sin of the spies, they were going somewhere. They were going to Israel. The question is when. The question is what road they would take. How soon they would get there. Are we there yet? That kind of thing. But they were going somewhere. But then, after the sin of the spies, they were wandering. They were not going anywhere. They were staying put in the wilderness for the next 38 years, and they knew it. So let's understand the mentality of a group of people, several million people, in the wilderness. Let's take the mindset of people going to Israel. They know they're going to Israel. They know about that.
They look forward to it.
They've gotten the Torah. They've built the Mishkan. They're at Har Sinai, and it's time to travel. And they're about to travel, and they start to travel. And in fact, the next, what we'll have in a couple of paragraphs ahead of us, we'll have the first time they actually traveled away from Har Sinai. Great. So now they're on the move. They're traveling. The only thing they want to do is get to Israel. There's really very little else they want over here. They're going to the Promised Land. That's where they're going. No one likes to travel. Traveling is not fun. They may have had the best form of travel you can have, but still, it's not fun to travel. You want to settle down. Who wants to be traveling? So they want to get there. So there certainly would be a push to try to move things along. They had no control over it. The cloud went up, the cloud went down. The cloud stayed put, they had to stay put. You could see that people would be itching to move. And it's hard to just sit there waiting for that cloud to go up. And when the cloud did go up, and you finally traveled, that's great. But for all you knew, it was gonna settle by that night, and that's it. You're done, and you're not going anywhere for the next few days. So, it not knowing is a very difficult thing. It's worse not to know often than it is. Even when something is bad, it's worse not to know than to know. Not knowing is a very difficult thing. More than that, people don't like to be imprisoned. People don't like to be told, stay where you are and don't move. That's very hard for people to do. Now, they didn't have to sit. They were allowed to move their bodies, but they were not allowed to go beyond the boundaries of the camp. They weren't allowed to go explore. Let's go see what's on the road ahead of us. You weren't allowed to do that. You had to stay put in the camp. When Hashem was good and ready for them to move, then the cloud would rise and they would move. And when he wasn't, and he wanted them to stay put, they had to stay put. So it is not an easy thing to do, to be so dependent on something where you have no idea what is dictating whether you should travel or not. It's no one's asking your opinion and no one is informing you of why. It just is. There's a lot of emuna that you have to have over there and just do what it is that Hashem tells you to do. Yeah.
But who says that's such a bad thing? After being in Egypt for hundreds of years and you didn't have a mind of your own and you were forced to do what the Mitzrayim told you to do, here, maybe it was very pleasant.
Okay.
It was a freedom. It was,
Okay.
But they still can't choose.
They didn't really have the
dream. Yeah. They might have wanted more freedom than they had. Now,
They did it.
It says they did it. They said they followed exactly what Hashem said. That's right. Then you have the sin of the spies. After the sin of the spies, they were told, you're not going into Israel. Every single one of you the men are going to die here. And everybody is stuck for the next 38 years. Men, women, everybody's stuck for the next 38 years. You're not going anywhere. Great. Now, if people are told that, so it's a terrible thing. Fine. Who wants to travel? Just stay put. I mean, where are we going exactly? Where's the rush? And yet, if the cloud would rise, you packed your stuff and you got up and you traveled. And then the cloud would set and then you would camp yourself down for the night. And the next morning the cloud would go up again, you traveled again. And then finally the cloud would set, you'd sit, okay, fine. Whew, okay, now we're settled. 3 days later, this cloud goes up, you're traveling. Where are we going? I don't know.
Where the cloud takes us.
Yeah.
Where the cloud takes us.
Why are we going? I don't know. It seems purposeless.
Yeah.
And yet, they did what Hashem told them to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. You put yourself in that mindset. Who wants to go anywhere? It's literally going around in circles. Who wants to do that? You feel purposeless. Yet, they did what Hashem told them to do. And the Torah tells us very specifically, over and over again, they went by the word of Hashem, they camped by the word of Hashem, they did what Hashem told them to do. I think that this nisayon, this challenge, both before the sin of the spies and after the sin of the spies, was a very difficult challenge. And it seems that the Jews passed the flying colors. It does not say that the Jews failed this test. We failed many tests in the wilderness. This one we did not fail.
We didn't kvetch.
Did kvetch at one point about the traveling, but not about this.
Right.
We will kvetch later on, actually, in Bahaloska about the traveling, but we'll talk about specifically what they kvetched about. But this, I think, is actually very significant that we don't give it much press, but you see that the Torah emphasizes it over and over again. They did what they were supposed to do. Lech Lech Achar Bamidbar seems to be leaving from a civilized and settled area, like Egypt, going into, okay, not civilized, settled, settled area, going into a wilderness.
So it's not that they went.
It says over there, Be'eretz Lo Zeruah. There was no food to eat. You just went, and they said, whatever Hashem says, we're doing. Here, they were already in it, and they just travel within the wilderness.
So some people didn't say, well, since I'm not going to Israel anyway, I'm just going to stay put. But everyone just...
It seems they all traveled. Now, we do know that there were people after the sin of the spies, the next day, who said to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, we sinned, let's go into Israel. And then they were killed for that. And that we'll learn about actually pretty soon. But it seems that the people did what the cloud indicated them to do, which I think is pretty significant. I don't know that 3 million people... At the very least, that they listened and they didn't. That's hard. Nobody likes traveling.
Yeah.
So, it's the same thing. So I think that's why the Torah emphasizes it over and over and over again.
Did the men dig pits every night just in case?
Not every night. There was the Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. So the rest of the time it wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. The Rashi says they all a percentage of them died every Tisha B'Av. We'll learn about that when we get to Parsha Shlach.
Thank you.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.